Welcome to the Home Building Hero, where we help you become the hero of your new home by providing you all the information that you need. No matter if you're an industry pro, you're building, or you're buying, we got you covered here at the Home Building Hero. We're coming to you live today from the LP Studios here in Wisconsin. I'm your host, David Bellman, president of Bellman Homes. Thank you for tuning in today. All right, I'm here today with Carolyn Cromings, managing partner of the Cromings Law Firm. Hey, Carolyn, welcome to the Home Building Hero.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on the program today. So for those of you that don't know, Carolyn is a lawyer and you have a background in the construction industry. So I guess just tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got involved in this career path and what you enjoy about it.
Sure. So I actually ended up in construction law out of necessity. So my husband and I, my last year of law school, started a material supply company. And so I really had to learn how to protect our money as far as lien rights went and learn how to interpret contracts and joint check agreements and lien waivers. And so I really kind of dove into it on that aspect, and it became my full-time job, and I had to start my own firm. And then it really started to line up like where I grew up. So my grandfather owned an excavation company. My first jobs were from, you know, my uncle who owned an irrigation company. My brother, you know, is in Eagle, Wisconsin. He owns an irrigation company. It's just where I grew up. And so it was just second nature to me to be able to understand the construction industry from the inside, from like the mom and pop business that are trying to keep the doors open and run a better business and feed their family and keep their employees happy. And then really be able to break down the legal concepts that are important to the residential contractor, the commercial contractor, in plain English, to help them run better businesses. So like my grandfather's excavation company went out of business because he didn't get paid on a few projects. And the
those are sad stories,
would have saved that business. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is help, you know, the people that are out there, what I like to call the get shit done tribe, that are out there building yep. things and getting things done right, that deserve to be protected.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the main problems that we see in the building industry, especially with the trades in particular, is that they're very good at doing that particular job and we need them to do that job, but they're not always necessarily the most savvy business owners. And you know, they're not always the best with paperwork, right? And that's where you can kind of come in and help. And I would imagine also, you know, good job security for you as well. But, you know, that's a huge problem. And I think that's why so many of them don't survive, or they maybe don't get passed on to another generation because they don't, you know how to sustain the business. They just know how to do the work that they do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, I see it all the time, is they start in something because they're really good at what they do. And usually it starts because they see they're working for somebody and they see that they can do it better, and the actual work. And then it's before they know it, you have to realize how to run a business to do the thing that you like to do. And that never came into the forethought of, oh, I need to do all these things so I could go do that thing that I love to do. And so, you know, being there to, then that's what we help with, like contracts and questions and, you know, should I sign this? What does that look like? And having that help on the front end will prevent like a misstep from wiping you out, because that's, you know, that can happen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One, you know, mistake or not having your paperwork correct, and you get the wrong customer, or, you know, we know the economy changes quickly in the construction industry and it's vastly affected by it. So, you know, you compound one or two mistakes and, you know, you could be quickly out of business if you're not careful. So, and I think you touched on something interesting as well with regards to, you know, I think that's something we see a lot in the industry, where you have somebody working for a company and they're doing that same kind of work. And then, you know, either, you know, they want to get off on their own, or they realize, like you said, they can do it a little better. And they want to do it their own way, or maybe the owner's cutting corners. So they're like, hey, I want to do it this way. And I think that's, you know, that's important that we see that happen from time to time, where people split off and, you know, start their own crews and grow, because it never seems like there's enough people in the building industry and the trade specifically.
No, I agree. And I think if some of what you see is, and there's give and take, right, all the time, but I think a lot of people, they try to get into the industry and something goes south and they get burned and then they just don't come back. It's the stress, if you're not on top of it, from these unpredictable situations, can be a lot. And yeah. So it's like, before you dive in, let's talk about, you know, there's great software out there that you can use. And actually, I just did it. We have a thing with JobTread where if you're on their software, you can hire us in your contract and we'll put it right in the software. So you see CYA all the time. And there's just so many other things like job costing, all of those things you need to know to run a business and not just, you know, do the thing that you love.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think sometimes contractors too are the type where they don't see that, you know, maybe spending money on an attorney or some documents. They see that that's just money coming out of my bottom line, but they're not realizing perhaps that, you know, that's why they're losing money because they don't have a solid contract or do you see that also?
Absolutely. So I kind of compare it to the dentist, right? Nobody wants to go to the dentist, but it's way better to go before you have a problem. You don't have to get fillings and teeth pulled, which are way more expensive. So, you know, a lot of my job is, you know, especially residential contractors, is the contract. And the important part of that is that it manages the client's expectations, because here's what happens. You're going to go do work for somebody that doesn't know anything realistic about the construction industry, but heard from their brother-in-law that it should take this long and it should go this way. And if you don't go in there and manage what that really is, then you're going to be judged against those expectations. And when it doesn't happen the way that they think that it should, then that's when they get upset.
No, you're very right. Managing expectations is huge for any contractor. And you know, the one thing you didn't mention was what people see on TV and, you know, Instagram and all these things, right? You know, hey, we come in and fix the house in 24 hours.
Like the next day, it's all done in 30 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. No, for sure. Yeah, no, we've seen that. So as far as like contractors, what do you think is the biggest mistake that they typically make when they're, you know, kind of just getting going or getting off on their own?
Under communicating. I think, like I said, I think they have a lot of assumptions that they think the homeowner thinks like they do. And if we don't clear that up, that's where we get in problems. And it doesn't, you know, having something in writing, it doesn't, even if you're just starting out, something is better than nothing, right? Something like scope of work. This is what I'm, you know, limited to this scope of work. You know, once you get some money in, we can do the CYA and add on all the scopes. We do it on flat feet. So it's price. So you can't afford not to, but a lot of it is too, like looking into all of these things before you start. Like, I know a lot of people are like me and they just jump in. So you have two types of people, like people that just jump in and figure out when they're going and they miss some stuff and they'll scrape their knees. And then you have other people that try to prepare so much that they never jump. So you gotta be somewhere in between the two.
Yep. Yeah. Healthy balance, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, you kind of alluded to contracts a little bit and, you know, I guess for, you know, let's talk more of like the consumer to like a trade, you know, and that relationship. What are some important things that people need to have in those agreements and work out to make sure that it's good for both sides?
So you're like talking about like an owner,
like a business to, you know, consumer or B2C kind of thing where it's like a consumer maybe hiring a painting contractor or a landscaper or something like that. Let's talk about that kind of transaction first.
So, and I think having a written agreement, right? But, and this is good for both sides, right? Having a written agreement with the scope of work, having in that agreement that the possibility of change orders, right? So like, you know, if you're remodeling something or if you're doing something, yes, I'm really good at what I do, or if you're a roofer, but I don't know if I tear into it, what's going to be under there. And there is the possibility that there will be additional cost, and here's how it will be handled. You know, being upfront about that whole process. Another thing that I think there's a huge disconnect on between owners and contractors is the idea of a punch list, right? So the owner can get very frustrated if they see like minor things as you're going on that aren't 100% fixed. And so what we write in our contracts is there's a punch process, which is like when we're complete or like 90% complete, you're going to go through your walkthrough, give me the list of everything that you see is wrong. And then we're going to go fix it, which is good for the contractor too, because then the owner goes through and signs off on it. And once it's signed off on, final payment's due. And then the contract says, now that, you know, it's been signed off on, any other claims are warranty claims, since we have that one pinch and a one punch list. And that if we're not paid in full, we don't honor warranty claims. So it kind of, because there's the last payment, and it's always a struggle between owner and contractor about.
Absolutely. And it's always a leverage point, right? Who's got leverage? And, you know, the consumer thinks they have all the leverage because they're holding the money. But the trade is already, you know, has expenses and things too. But, you know, there's always that kind of delicate balance. And then, you know, of course, the consumer, as soon as they write that check, they always feel like, well, that guy's going to, I'm never going to see that guy again, right?
No, and, and that's why we put the warranty claim in there, because you can always submit claims. But the thing is like, just have them one final punch so that when everybody knows that it's done, and then it can go in a warranty claim, and we'll definitely honor it. And as a general rule, contractors want to do a good job, right? They want.
No, they do. They take pride in their work. They don't want to come back and have to fix things. They want to try and do it right the first time. They're not purposely trying to, you know, sometimes consumers are like, well, this guy was just trying to, they're not trying to.
If they made it to that far, the guys that are trying to screw you take the check and never show up.
Yeah, that's how they're going to get you. It's, I rounded the corner on this and I saved, you know, $5. Like, that's not how contractors think or work. But consumers think that way, right?
Exactly. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not that guy. I'm here to, you know, I'm here to help. Well,
and you know, as far as protecting contractors too, I mean, there are those people out there that are just, they're not really good customers. I mean, I had one not too long ago that I built a house for, and it's just like every day they're sending me a list of things. It's like, no, we spent 2 hours at your house walking through it. We created the list and I had you sign the list. That's the list.
Yeah, we're not changing the list.
You know, and it's like every day they were like, well, I noticed this now and I saw this. And it's like, no, that's not, you know, like, I don't have a 911 service, you know, call where, you know, you see, you know, whatever, a little imperfection in your drywall. I'm not going to send somebody out in 24 hours and fix it. That's not how this works.
And just being upfront about that process. And the one thing I can tell you is that most of the time when you're in that situation, there was some kind of indicator before you signed the contract. There was something that was a flag that, hey, I should trust your gut.
Yep.
Trust your gut, because there's always like, let them be somebody else's problem. You can go into the next job.
So do you have any advice for like contractors or even for builders, you know, a way to kind of maybe screen that a little better, or understand that, or some warning signs, like how what would you give as far as advice for that?
If you have to change your process for somebody, right?
Okay.
Like, there's give and take on a negotiation in the contract at certain terms, but if they want you to go outside something you normally do, like they want to do, you do milestone payments and they want to do a cost plus, that is just not going to be successful for many reasons, because that's not how you're set up to work. That's not how you've set up your systems to work. And it's a completely different thing, and
you
can be happy. And so if it's not a fit, right, that's the main thing. Yep. And you know, trust your gut, have everything in writing. And then, you know, what I also have in the contracts is what I call the escape clause, which basically says the contractor can at any time for any reason cancel this contract, meaning you have an out. Because if you don't write that in there, you don't have an out. And that means you're on the hook to perform the work that you said you would, even if you don't want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure there's been many of contractors that have started a job and probably wish they never took it, I'm sure. But I like that with the warning sign. And I think, you know, part of it is just, you know, sticking with what you do best as a company. And yeah, if you are set up to do it a certain way, you're the professional. Right. You're the one that should know what you're doing. So you have to basically sort of set the rules of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And trust your abilities, trust yourself. You're the one who's running this. And, you know, if you do something outside what's normal, have it in writing. So I had a home builder decide that for this particular guy that he was just going to manage the project and not be a home builder. He didn't have anything in writing. So the last trade on the job was a roofer. And the owner goes, okay, we're done. I don't need you out here managing the project anymore. I'll handle it. Well, he stiffs the roofer. The contract, of course, from the roofer is into the home builder's name. And so now the argument is that you were a home builder, you need to pay. And I don't have a contract to say one way or the other. So it's a very expensive fight.
Absolutely. So yeah, you kind of partially answered the question I was going to ask, which is, why is it so dangerous to do business without a contract? And I think that's certainly one of the examples. What other things can occur if you don't have it in writing?
So the big thing is that if you don't have it in writing, if there's an issue, don't expect to get paid. Because here's why. If you want to get paid, you're going to have to file a lawsuit. And then when you file a lawsuit, there's going to be a judge or a jury who decides what your contract was. And they're not in construction. They don't know anything about it. And not only that, the process to get in front of a judge or a jury is, you know, immensely expensive. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to get to that point.
And at that point, your $15,000 job, you may spend that and then some in legal fees and not end up any further along.
And that's hope you don't get sued. Because what also happens is that you decide, fine, I'm going to walk away for the what I'm owed. And they sue you saying you were supposed to do 10 times the work that you were supposed to do. And I got nothing to say.
Correct. Yeah. True. And again, the card that's always played by, you know, the judge or the jury is, you are the professional, you should know better, right?
Exactly.
And the homeowner is the innocent lamb or the deer. Maybe they're not. They're not always that way, right? But in that case, they are, right?
But judges and juries are homeowners before they know anything about the construction industry. I'll promise you that.
Absolutely.
And so what I've seen time and time again is like the guy didn't finish the punch list and there's a scratch and it's blown up 3 times normal size. And there's a, from the jury, I can't believe you left the house this way.
Sure.
That's not good for
conflict. Yeah. You're not going to win. Right. You got the deck stacked against you.
In fact, it's a hard battle.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So, you know, obviously the one kind of hesitation for a contractor, even for a builder is, you know, I'm going to whip out this big document now and this thing, and I'm going to scare all my customers away. So how do you find neutral ground on a contract so that, you know, becomes something that both parties would be comfortable, you know, signing off on?
So I think you do away with the legalese, right? There's no reason that the contract cannot be something that both the parties understand. And if we're just upfront about what we want, then it becomes really clear, right? Okay, here's the schedule. Here's what happens if we can't meet the schedule. Here's our payment schedule. Here's what happens if you don't pay us.
Yep.
And here's,
so it's kind of like setting up the scenarios, like the what ifs, right? It's, you know, that's kind of how our building contract is. It's like, okay, this is how we're going to get paid. This is the time that we're going to ask for a payment. This is how much we're going to ask for, you know, as a percentage of the job. And, you know, and then if you don't pay, this is what we're going to do, like, right? So you're just kind of, what's all the scenarios and how are they going to work out?
Exactly. In a way that you can understand it, because there's no need for it to be legalese, and it will be more effective if it's not legalese. And in the courtroom, there's no like magic language that, you know, that's going to save you, that has to be in there. Just like, this is what I'm trying to say, and just say that.
So a little bit off topic with this, but I think it's important to talk about is there are generally industry recognized contracts. A lot of times associations have those and provide those. So I guess, what would you say to someone, you know, because I think a lot of times contractors, they can go out and hire you to do all this, right? But sometimes there's already pre-made things that they just have to invest in maybe joining an association. Is that generally a good start for a lot of newer companies just to get the access to that?
Absolutely. And there's some great ones like the building that have some great customized contract. What I would do though is, I don't know if the association has somebody that can explain to you, because sometimes there's a lot of legalese in those.
Sure.
Explain to you what it means, so that if you're asked by your customer, you know what it means, or an outside attorney that can explain it to you in plain English or change it a little more plain English. And then, you know, if you need help with negotiations, find an attorney. But I think those are great, especially for, there's not so many resources out there for repair remodelers, but for new home builders, there's some great associations that have some great builder friendly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm very involved with home builders associations, and they do have a lot of standard forms that I think, just knowing from what my personal experience is, like, the standard forms are great. Like, I read through them because they'll be like, oh, I didn't think to put this clause into my paperwork, but I don't usually use their documents because it's usually kind of boilerplate. It doesn't always apply to all the things in my business. And there's probably, you know, if it's a 14-page document, there's probably 4 pages of stuff in there that I don't ever need or would ever need in my paperwork. So why have it in there?
Exactly. And I think once you get a form, sometimes people are afraid to change it, but if you're, you know, and take out the things that don't apply, and, you know, and then make it more plain English. I think absolutely. And you can have a help like with a lawyer customize it just for you. But I think those forms are a great place to start. Absolutely.
Excellent. So, you know, obviously we've seen a big shift in our industry. You know, we've had the pandemic. Whether, you know, we can argue whether it's over or not, but we're getting in the tail end, right? How has it impacted just contracts and even just, you know, how people do business? Is that from a lawyer standpoint, have you seen a big shift in how people are doing business, whether it's electronically or not as much face to face?
Yeah, electronic has been a good thing. As far as the terms of the contract, being upfront about material price escalations, being upfront about the schedule being delayed because of the shortage of materials and unavailability, and then I think it's really brought a lot of flexibility, because you're either going to have to switch and try different things, because some of the stuff is not available, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Supply chain has been, you know, an ongoing nightmare for all of us.
Black swan companies are going to come out of this that had to, you know, create new things because other things weren't around. So I think that's definitely a great thing and innovative. I do, you know, on the commercial side, what I'm seeing is a lot of like owners trying to get people to sign guaranteed maximum price contracts so they can limit their exposure to material price increases, which is obviously at the risk of the subcontractor because they're the one who's actually doing the work. So be wary of those.
Sure.
But I think the whole thing has pushed us to be, especially on the residential side, up front about, I'm going to quote you this job, but as long as materials stay the same, and having something in the contract for that, because if not, and in your proposal.
So you're kind of talking like an accelerator clause or something. You know, I know we had a lot of contracts going into the pandemic where, okay, this was the price. And then obviously things changed dramatically. And, you know, we made the conscious decision to not necessarily go back and badger our customers over pricing. But, you know, unfortunately that doesn't help the bottom line at the end of the day. It's a nice customer service thing to do, but you know,
it's painful because you're locked into those contracts, and so you can try to negotiate with them, but if they, you know, that's a hard thing.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of work in the last year that, or year and a half, that I've seen too, where, you know, I think people have come up with some really good ways to navigate some of those things and supply chain stuff, and right, just substituting a product, or, you know, but you know, when you go from something that takes 3 weeks to get, you know, taking over a year, you know, there's definitely needs to either be flexibility or, you know, substitutions or something to make the parties happy. And that's where communication is probably key. I think you would agree.
Absolutely. Just being upfront about, yes, we're going to try this. And then, you know, too, I had a lot of contractors be like, can we limit the time that they have to make a choice in the contract? Because I'm like, yeah, you could actually put like for every day over 2 days, you get an extra day added to your schedule or something like that. Because
sure. You know, that's a huge problem that we have as builders is, yeah, customers making decision, right? They'll sign the contract, but then we can't start till they do selections. Well, if they don't make their selections or don't want to sign off, or, you know, we still can't start the job. So now we've still locked in the price, and now we're waiting on them to make some decisions. You know, they made the big decision, but we need them to make the little decisions.
The little ones, I know.
Yep. Yeah. It's a constant push pull. And I don't think consumers really understand that, right? They don't understand that them not deciding is what's holding up the job a lot of times. And most customers, it's you, Mr. Builder, or you, Mr. Contractor's fault, when it might be their fault too.
No, absolutely. Just being upfront about, this is why, because if you don't pick out the tile, then I can't do this or this or this. You got us on hold.
Yeah. I always say it's like dominoes, right? You set up a bunch of dominoes and the one has to fall to knock the next one down. And so, you know, we've changed our process with our building company, where we will not even send plans out or anything to our trades until all their selections are done. And they even have to be priced out and approve the pricing before we send it out. So we used to send out plans and then we'll do the selections and add those on later, but then you'd have conflicts or you'd be waiting forever.
What the grade you gave them, and they want something higher, then it's a change order. And yeah, it sounds like a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we had to, do that. And I think sometimes you have to evaluate when you're in the trades or in the building industry, you have to evaluate, you know, the process and the order that you do things. And sometimes there is a better way to do it. So what kind of documents do you think are not always used that maybe should be used, whether it's, you know, building or working with trades? Is there a common one that you see that people tend to overlook and not utilize?
You know, the contractors are notorious for not getting signed change orders and just agreeing that they'll do it. And most of the time when you're dealing with a reasonable person, it's not a problem. But the one time you're not, you do the work and
guilty. Yep. I did it one time and I never did it after that. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, you're trying to be a nice guy. You just want to do it. And they say they'll sign it later, but then they don't. And then you're screwed. And it, you know, I think that's.
Yeah. I had one time, younger couple, and he was an attorney, and I was like, okay, you know, whatever. I like figure he knows, you know, and it was actually a real simple thing. It was like a little detail on how we did the arch. And I had the carpenter there and I had my project manager and I met him there and we all talked about it. And we all like, this is how I'm going to do it. Even kind of did one. And the guy's like, yep, that looks good. Go ahead. And we did it. And then the next day, you know, he came out with his wife didn't like it and said, nope. And we're like, And we're like, you told all of us, like, we had all these people here and they're like, no, tear it out. We don't want it. And I'm like, And it was just one of those. And at that point, I'm like, I'm stopping the job. And so I did, and it sat for like a month, and they dug their heels in and like, show us where in the paperwork it says that you did that. And I'm like,
my own paperwork hung me.
I'm like, you know what you said though, but it's like, okay. So finally I was like, okay, from that point on, I'm like, I don't care. Even though that was a no charge item, I'm writing it down and you're signing it. So we invested in, it's called Builder Trend, which is an online portal. It has a change order system. You can do it right on your phone. So it's like right now, okay, going forward now, it's really easy. It gets typed right on your phone, right at the job site, gets emailed right over to them. They can approve it on their phone. And if you don't approve it, it's not getting done.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree. Technology has made huge advances. You don't have to carry a PO book in your truck anymore. You know,
correct.
You email, here's a text, and it's in your job file, right?
Yeah. So. And yeah, there's a fee to that. Like, I pay money to have that program, and I pay per job, and I pay monthly to have that. But at the same time, it makes my jobs faster. Actually, they do more changes. They have to prepay for them. So I get paid right away. Like, it's like, it totally pays for itself, but it's an investment into the business. And yeah. I'm sure, you know, again, a lot of trades and contractors don't necessarily want to add more costs, but sometimes you need those.
I mean, things. I think in this day and age to run a company without that is a mistake, right? Like, Job Trend is the one I'm working. Their pricing is stupid cheap. And they have just so many options. And because like me as a lawyer, right, I want everything in writing. Because contractors are great about, yeah, I'm going to go fix this, but there's nothing ever in writing that it is, you know, like we have this meeting, we're like that, we're going to go fix this, we're just going to go do it. And then that happens. And you
absolutely.
Know? So if you can set the change order out there, even if it's $0, it's there, it's in writing. And I don't have to dive through hundreds of banker boxes for a job file to find what I'm looking for.
Find a receipt from that. Yeah. From the local hardware store to prove that you bought it. Yeah. So how often should companies really evaluate like their paperwork, their contracts, and look at updating those or keeping those fresh? What's the general practice for that?
So if you have one that's worked for a while and have, you know, if you've had it looked over by an attorney specifically for your trade, for your state, and for the things that you're doing, then I would just have it up, you know, every 5 years or so. But here's the thing, as things happen or things change, you need to add it in. Right. So sure. A lot of that's on you. Like, you don't want to experience this homeowner being, you know, mad because you let the dog out, put it in the contract that you're not responsible for the pets, or
sure.
You're
going to
put a sign in the front yard, whatever it is, just put it in there. And so, and in that way, it's a living, breathing thing. Right.
Okay.
Very rarely are there state changes that would.
Yeah. When you have like a code change or you have a regulation change, that's probably a time to reevaluate what's.
Yeah, which is not very often, right? So like every state on the residential side has, like California basically writes the contract for you. You know, every state's got a little something.
They're totally weird. We can admit that. I don't care. I've said that on the program. Well, I probably don't have a lot of fans in California, but that's okay.
It's Connecticut. They have a whole consumer protection board, and it's really tough to be a builder out there. So, I mean, like every state has different, because the homeowner is a consumer. Now on the commercial side, business to business, they really don't care. It's when it becomes a consumer that
they're the ones that are going to scream the loudest, right? They're going to walk into the courtroom with their newborn and they're going to be yelling and screaming, and you ruined my dream, right?
Exactly. And they go to the legislature and they're very sympathetic ear, and you know, so that's how they get the rules on that. And some of it's good. Don't get me wrong. There's not to say that there hasn't been bad contractors out there that's made those things out there, but that it's such a rarity.
Sure, that makes sense. So, you know, you can have the best, you know, contractor, you can have the best builder, trade, whatever, but sometimes you're just going to get in a dispute. And when that happens, you know, usually communication kind of breaks down. And what are the best first steps when you get into that situation where there is a dispute, whether you're a homeowner or a builder, what's the best route to go?
So the first thing is, if you think you feel iffy about it, you just don't know. The first thing I always tell my clients is do a timeline. Whether it's internal or what. So do a timeline with a backup of documents. If you have something, you already kind of have that in your online platform. But if you don't, do a timeline with all of your evidence that proves everything that you're trying to say. And if it becomes nothing, it doesn't matter. But if it does, you have everything down there. And the other thing is that, you know, try to be reasonable, make reasonable solutions and offers. Don't ignore, right? And it's like, okay, we have this list of problems. I'm proposing to do X, Y, Z. They can accept it or not accept it. And the thing is that nothing as long as you don't ignore a letter from a lawyer or a lawsuit, nothing is going to happen fast. So you're going to have time to get notice, respond, make a reasonable offer. If they're not being reasonable, then you're just in a tough situation. And you know, because most of these things can be worked out. Don't be wrong, you end up giving a little more than you want to, but it saves so much time and litigation that it's sure. just worth.
Yeah, I mean, if you're spending all your day in court or spending time with you, the lawyer, not to say lawyers are bad, but you know, it's it costs, right? It costs money for you, your clock's ticking, right? So, you know, if you can, you know, whatever, do a little bit extra and spend a, you know, extra couple hundred bucks here to make them extra happy and make it go away versus spending months fighting it just to win.
Yeah. And mostly it's the pride factor we got to overcome. Yes, it sucks. And yes, I know they're wrong. I absolutely know they're wrong, but you don't want to be paying, you know, $10,000 a month to defend a stupid lawsuit. Just, I know, just learn. Let's, what can we do so this doesn't happen again?
I had one of those this year where it was like, we had everything in a row and it's like, they just weren't going to give up. And it's just like, okay, we either just bite the bullet and do this and get them out of our hair, or, you know, yeah, we can go to court and spend all this money and waste this time and the aggravation and the energy. And yeah, we probably would win at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, then we lose because, you know, I'm going to lose out on other jobs because I'm not focused on it, or I'm spending all my time on this and my mental health or whatever you want to call it, right?
It's so much better spent investing in your business than spending on lawyers, because in a lawsuit, the best you could ever hope for is to break even. And 99% of the time, that doesn't even happen when you win.
Absolutely. Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, besides just helping out with trades and contractors, you've got some resources out there as well, right? You've authored some books. Tell me a little bit about the books. And I think you got a podcast. Let's hear about this.
So I have a book called Quit Getting Screwed, and it's actually for commercial subcontractors about all of the bad stuff that's in a commercial subcontract, because I had a client that actually ended up going out of business, not because he did a bad job, but because he didn't understand the contract. And it like wiped them out. And so nobody was saying anything about how bad these subcontracts are in plain English. So I wrote Quit Getting Screwed. And at the same time, I launched Subcontractor Institute, where I actually teach the 20 chapters of the book for free. Since then, I've turned Subcontractor Institute into a nonprofit to really work on contractor education. And then the second book I wrote was called Quit Getting Stiffed. That one is actually on specifically Texas lien rights.
Okay.
But the same time I launched that book on Subcontractor Institute, also, I launched the rules to do liens correctly in all 50 states. And I've had, if you have a question about your state, I've been interviewing attorneys from all 50 states, specifically about the lien rights in their states and how to do it correctly. And so that's on the podcast as well. And the podcast, we talked to interesting people about bookkeepers, and we had Barbie the welder on. She's got a great story. Just people in the industry.
I'm not familiar with her. I'll have to check her out. Barbie the welder.
She's on LinkedIn and Instagram. She does some really great work. It's a really great interview. But just how not to get screwed in the construction industry, because, you know, like I said, the get shit done tribe deserves to be protected. And it's not just legal, right? It's all of the things.
Yeah. And I mean, we start wiping out the trades. You know, they're already hard enough to get. And then, you know, you start wiping them out because, you know, maybe they're a little weak on the paperwork. At the end of the day, we're not getting done what we need to do, which is helping people get their homes fixed or built or whatever it is that they need. Exactly. And we need more of those folks in the industry for sure.
Exactly.
Well, fantastic. This is great stuff. And, you know, sometimes we overlook these kind of things, whether it's a builder or a customer. You know, the contract and the agreement and the paperwork is really vitally important. It's a necessary item in the building process, and the better that everybody understands it, the better the process goes. And, you know, I think it's important for everybody to take a moment, take a step back and look and make sure that they do have good paperwork and a good process. And certainly if you have a problem, then that's also a good opportunity to make sure that you address it in your future paperwork too, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like the best thing you can learn is how to fix it and not do the same thing twice.
Yep. Yeah. Don't make the same mistake twice. That's good advice. So if people want to learn a little bit more or find out about your book, where's the best way that they can reach out and find you?
Sure. So the book is on Amazon, Quit Getting Screwed. The podcast is just the Quit Getting Screwed podcast. It's on Apple and Spotify and all the things. If you want to reach out to me, it's thecromeanslawfirm.com. And our phone number is 713 715-7334, and we have free consultations, and we deal with and help contractors from across from all 50 states.
Fantastic. I'll put some of that information in the show notes so people can find it. That way, if you're listening and you want to check it out, you can do that. So again, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining the Home Building Heroes. It was a real pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Once again, thank you for tuning in to the Home Building Hero, broadcasting live from the Bellman Home Studio. If you haven't already, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content. Until next time, I'm David Bellman, signing off.